Welcome to our annual back to school presentation. Oh my God. That'll scare you into silence. Welcome. We're ready to go again for another back to school year. To get us started, I'd like to have a stand up in a moment. But now that you're all seated, I'd like to we'll our national anthem, and we also have a treat because we have an additional song. We have a young recording artist with us who has CDs and videos and all that kind of stuff. She's going to be a ninth grader starting here at San Luis Obispo High School this year, and so I'm going to ask you to please rise for the national anthem, and then she'll finish up with one of her own original songs. Please welcome Dasha.
Stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streamed, and the rocket's red glare, the bomb bursting in the air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave the land
much. So like you said, my name's Dasha, and I'm going to be a freshman here at SO High School next year for that. And this is a song I wrote a couple weeks ago when I was in England. So hope you guys like it. Oh, I need to plug in.
All I need is for you to breathe. Love me off. Shame me like I don't have a chance. Miss me like I'm over you. And I'm leaving soon. Oh no, I know, no, I don't want to see you. Screaming on to that over my
don't want to see you fall again. Baby, be slow. I don't want to hear you call. And hold on, baby, be slow. I don't want you fall again. Hold on, I don't want to hear you fall again. Please stop staring in my eyes. If you don't think of me, you'll be alright. Don't come to me, you come after you. I won't, you'll be fine. But right now, it's not us. Don't come after me.
Now I got to follow that.
And yeah. I'd like to thank Eric Prater and the district office for inviting me. You guys rock. Thank you.
Thank you. Woo. Thank you, Dasha. Man, fantastic. You know, cities and counties and states and things have poet laureates. Our district has one. And so back by popular demand, reading something that he wrote just for this occasion, I believe. Stephen Patrick Sullivan.
Hey, well, welcome back, everybody. It's good to see y'all. Well, you know, after last year, maybe if I might do something. Again, I said, sure, and at Rick Mandersheim's retirement party, now there was a good man we hate to see leave, but when we stay at the school district and, you know, it comes that time. 3 more years for me, maybe. So, anyway, I thought what's going on in the district lately, and I came up with this poem. It's called Steam Power. I was asked by Dr. Prater to try and put what we do into a poem. The teaching of science, of technology, of arts and mathematics, the histories, the social sciences, the language, the integration of these disciplines into a whole knowledge human being. I was amazed at the prospect. Realized maybe our district or 14 years we are given to achieve this most daunting task, using a common list over those years of a student's life. But no, it is what it is. And the 24 years I have been process here at San Luis Coastal Unified School District has taught me that it is the people. This work, certificated or classified, what makes the difference is the care given. The care I take to shape or to blow off a hardscape, paint a sports field at one of our given by all of you in what you do makes a difference. Is teaching us that we are all more interrelated than perhaps what we think, that what we hear does affect what happens over there. Of course, what we do here does affect what happens here and every day, tomorrow, and for years to come. We know we farm. So yes, take the time, get it right, Give the best care you can to each moment, to each student. Then our students will be the most beautifully integrated, whole human beings possible, ready and willing to meet the day life. Thank you.
This year with making introductions, kind of setting the stage for this morning, and so I'll do that. I don't think I'm just going to kind of have people stand introductions. I thought what I would do is just really talk about some of the new things that have passed several months, the summer and the spring. There's a lot of things that have been happening in San Luis Coastal, a lot of changes, a lot of exciting things, and so maybe I can make some some people, but I'll try to make some introductions as I go through that. Newland, who's our personnel director, and I don't know if, hopefully everyone's had an opportunity to meet Kristen. Kristen, stand up. Stand up. I mean, I know there's not a lot of lights here, but stand up. Kristen, okay? Kristen Newland. We hired over 60 new employees this year, so she's personnel staff. I see some of them over here. And I met, I think it was 40 new teachers on Monday. We had a new teacher and a new employee. 40% of our teaching workforce is brand new. I mean, that's impressive. And they were almost all young, because everyone looks young to me. Kristen tells me it brings the median age of the San Luis Coastal employee down to 61. So it's like Hotel California, you know, check out but never leave, right? We also had the opportunity of having 6 new principals in our district and a lot of new school secretaries. I should probably make more emphasis on that because we know who runs those schools. And a lot of new school secretaries, right? But I do want to introduce, because that's 40% of our principal workforce. I mean, that's I think the biggest change I've seen. And so some of these people will be very familiar to you. But I do want to introduce them, and they can stand up. But I know it's hard for me to see, but maybe you guys can see them. But Laura Storm is here. Laura Storm, where's Laura? There she is. All right. Laura is a new principal of Monarch Grove Elementary School. Successful principal. We stole her from Lucia Marr. We've been stealing a lot from Lucia Marr lately, so that's great. Not necessarily new, but we made it official, and we're really excited we made it official. At Smith Elementary, Joyce Hansen. Where's Joyce? All right, back there. All right, Joyce. Superstar, literally. At Los Osos Middle School, we made a hire at the very end of the school year, right into the summer, bringing up somebody from Orange County who's had a successful role as a principal, and before that, a science teacher and a technology guy, Andre Illig. Is Andre here? I know he's here. Where's Andre? Somewhere. Going back to a place where he spent some time, Morro Bay High School, Dr. Kyle Pruitt. Where is Kyle? Kyle's here. I saw him. Someone as long as I have, but is going to have her first principalship at Los Ranchos Elementary, Marley Schmidt. Where is Marley? Marley, stand up so everyone can see you. I can't see you. And last but certainly not least, we have a principal in charge of Teach Elementary School. Doing a half-time principal and a half-time technology mentor stuff, and that is James McMillan. James, right there. Outstanding. Great. And so on the subject of technology, one of the new things we have done, in fact, it is finishing up, I think, today while you're here, putting the final hubs. We have Wi-Fi'd up all of our elementary schools. All 10 of our Wi-Fi ready. An amazing, amazing busy project this summer. We had a lot of outside contractors, electric, but our IT department, our buildings and grounds department all had a lot to do with that. And they're point out, because some of these people you might not know. Our new director of maintenance was real instrumental in that. I see Steve right there. Steve comes with a lot of expertise, moved his young family here from Orange County, so sticks, tech, secondary technology, innovation, etc., had a lot to do with it. And that's stand up, Kim. Good, good. $1 million project doesn't get done that way without without somebody's kind of pulling the string. It all work. And so our other assistant superintendent, Ryan Moneybags Pinkerton. There you go. Good job. And somebody else who is new to our district, he came at the end of the spring. I know because he's out and about, taking on a big role for us. Our director of facilities, operations, and transportation, new to us, is after a successful career in the private major architecture firm, Anthony Palazzo. Where's Anthony? Is Anthony in the back of the room? Yeah. Yeah. Little known fact, Anthony was when I was a social science teacher in San Juan Capistrano. Anthony was in my student. So yeah, I was so influential as an AP teacher that he became a buildings and grounds guy, you know. And I'm watching you back there. I know what you're doing, Anthony. And there's no statute of limitation on grade changes. So, all right. Google is new to us. Google is new for our school. The new young teachers are going, look at that idiot. You know, Google is new for us. So this is exciting. This is a real exciting. Having our new kind of server program based, and it's remarkable with that Google satellite technology and Google Earth and all that stuff from the comfort watch all the classroom. It's remarkable. Just have like 100 monitors, my couple, see if everyone's following the rules. You know, look at that. I think there's some red vines. Policy. Let's get some carrot sticks out there right now. You know, it's just, it's remarkable. You thought those little Wi-Fi hubs were Wi-Fi hubs. They're actually cameras. It's like Vegas. I can see if you're cheating, right? So, hey, Eric, look at this. I think she looked at that name before she pulled the. I don't think that was a random pull. I think she's counting popsicle sticks. The secondary teachers have no idea what I'm talking about. So they're like, I didn't see sticks out there. They just had like fruit and muffins and things, you know. So you high school people, it's okay. School starts on Monday. It's all you need to know. Late start, sleep in, come in, sleep in. It's okay. All right. Where was I? I have to have a script. Okay. There's powerful applications. We've had a lot of people running around showing things. I've seen Eric Jarvis. And somebody's really been instrumental in kind of getting us off the ground. And I do want to make sure I acknowledge her. Jen O'Hagan. Where's Jen? Stand up, Jen. There you are. It's going to be, I know it's really a tricky thing to learn for, especially for our wonderful for our students. And I really think, I've concluded, the went to Google is because it's just a lot easier if you don't know the answer to say, let's Google it, than it is, I don't know, let's Novell login, groupwise password, user ID, access denied it, you know, so off the tongue a little better. We had a development in the last couple years, and I should have mentioned it last year, in that we have served our students in our community in Los Osos, Mora Bay, and San Luis Obispo. Very exciting. So free lunch all summer long. This has nothing to do with summer school, and it's a cooperation. We've been able to feed a lot of students. Some people have been really, there's lots of people, especially our food services department. But kind of set this up with the food bank last year, and she should be acknowledged for it. Foster and homeless youth coordinator somewhere here. And of course, our food service director, Kathy Martin. Kathy's, I know she's here. Yeah, really remarkable. We served 5,000, this is as of last. Done more than this, 5,107 breakfasts and 13,526 lunches were distributed as of last week. And that was one of the most substantial meals some of our kids got. It's fantastic. Really good. Another new thing, I mentioned it. Charles has its own campus, which is fantastic. So Teach is now moved to the old Pacheco site. Because, of course, 12 years ago, we moved Pacheco from the old Teach site. So these bus drivers back there, you just imagine that first day. Hey, where are you going, kid? Old Pacheco, new Pacheco, Teach? Bishop's Peak, you know? You look smart, I'll bring you over here. You know, I always hear about... This is not true. I've been in the district for over 20 years. One of those old legends that people on the coast and people in the city aren't true. Well, you know, the city gets everything, and Los Osos and Mora Bay gets nothing. And I've worked in the coast. I've worked in the district office. It's just not true. To dispel the rumors, we've just decided, just yesterday, we're going to take Del Mar Elementary and Monarch Grove. You know, it'll just, old Monarch Grove, New and it'll all be good. So, to wrap it up here, the big new thing is that we are initiating a bond campaign. I'll probably hear a lot more about that. The school district is going to be going out for a facilities bond, and I have to be very careful about this. There's kind of these fair political. I'm not allowed to. Advocate a position while I'm in paid status. I know that's hard to believe. I'm paid right now. So I can give you facts. Here's some facts. We did a major tax override, a little different. Those don't exist anymore. A number of years ago, called Measure A. Some of you have been. We wrapped that up about 2001. That did a great. Elementary schools and our middle schools, they really got rehabilitated, a lot of infrastructure fixes, new buildings, multi-classrooms in some cases, libraries, great, you know, offices in some cases. And so a lot of great work was done, but the money for it really had an effect on our high schools. And so that whole bond was paid off. And we know that all of our schools right now have facility needs, all of our schools, all 16 of our some needs, but our high schools are really needy. They are showing they need some upgrading. And so about two-thirds of this bond measure is intended to go to our high schools and some other projects if it passes. This is a property tax measure that will be on the November ballot. There's a committee that's actively working on a campaign that is outside of our school district because we can't advocate during that during the school day or during the work day. We can do whatever we want after the work day, which never ends for you guys, I know. But after the work day, we can. And the facts of the bond is that we're asking our voters to support the schools to the tune of $49 per $100,000 of assessed value. So assessed value, not market value of the property. So we will see. And, you know, I can talk factually. We We've hired a lot of new teachers. I just met a couple last Monday. I think they're here. I think I saw them. Kelly Thornton, San Luis Obispo High School, right? Where's Kelly? Stand up, Kelly. Where is she? Oh, she is. Slow High, right? Morro Bay High. I mixed it up. I'm sorry. And Lindsay Nichols, Slow High. See, sitting right next to you. Women in Science. It's awesome. So I just want you to know that if you need any chemicals for your labs, all you need is like a good X-Acto knife. You know, you got asbestos, lead paint, formaldehyde, you know, electricity, you know, wires laying around, you know, rust, it's all there. And I neglected to mention, I'm supposed to do with these things, that if you need to use the restrooms anytime during this thing, just don't do that, okay? Don't go in the restrooms here. This is the new gym. I worked here at Slo High for many years. This is the new gym. This gym is like 30 or 40 years old. This is the new gym. We know this. It has the rotary dial phone in the wrestling room. We know it's the new gym because 5 minutes for those lights to come on. And so this is the new gym. Across from is the old gym. And the old gym is a classic. Facade, part of what was kind of known as the annex, that in the room next to it, because it was annexed from a college when Slo High from its old location, which is where Albertsons is down the street. The history teacher in me. And so that building, the old, was actually built as a Work Project Administration Act in the 1930s under the Roosevelt administration. That's Franklin Roosevelt Anthony. And so if you step into that building, it smells like it's built in the Roosevelt administration. It's been there a long time. So we have the old gym, and then we have the very old gym, and that would be Jim Quesenberry, our SLCTA board president. And Jim's not here. So we're all going to tell him that that's what Eric said, right? Okay? Jim's, I do want to introduce our board of mine, and he is actually the reason he has a great excuse to is he's very involved in an organization called People Helping People that feeds the indigent and very involved in that organization. I do want to introduce our board, and even though he's not here, Jim, our board president, former president of the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, also his Rotary Club, of which I'm a member and will be paying a hefty fine for, I'm sure. But I'd like to introduce our other board members who I think are all up here. We have Ellen Schiller, clerk of the board. Stand up, we can see you. Chris Unger. Is Chris here? I know he is. All right. Chris, it's not official yet, but will be the California School Boards Association president. So that's fantastic. Dr. Catherine Eisenrath Rogers. Walt Millar. Marilyn Roger. And last but not least, Mark Buckman. Fantastic. And also on the November ballot, that's the time when we re-elect. And we have four incumbent positions up in November. And they all decided to run again and to run against them. So we don't even have to have an election. That's public confidence. Good. That's good. Where am I? Oh, back to the facility issue. You realize that in the PE frameworks, in high school is required. And so you've seen the aquatics here at the high school, you know, the PE teachers hang on the lawn and just, you know, breathe, you know, flip on your back, you know, and so in the grass, we're going to play inner tube water polo, you know. Morro Bay and Slo High School are the two largest comprehensive schools in our county, and they don't have swimming pools. So, anyway, hopefully I've been very ambivalent and neutral, so you have no idea where I stand on our poor, dilapidated So, moving on to today. And stay in paid status, maybe. This board controls my contract. We have a theme here the last couple of years, which has to do with the power of stories. 2 years ago, Dr. Prey told us a story about the daffodil principle, the idea of planting a few things, having it grow into a beautiful thing. Last year, I talked a bit about my kind of prize gift, Fiji. We had a former teacher of the year, Kerry Norelli, share some stories of his life and his insights. Dr. Prater told a story about the difference of being just merely tired because of the kind of work we do. And we know that in great literature and great art, stories have multiple meanings. I mean, our literature teachers would tell us the things that really resonate and have multiple interpretations to them. They're not simple. The medium and the message can sometimes differently in all people. I remember when I was in Florence, I guess it's the Academy, going to see the statue of David, and as I was walking down the hall to see it, it was breathtaking. I literally gasped. Looked at that statue for about 45 minutes. I realized it was the most beautiful work of art I'd ever seen. And I think great art moves in different ways. So today we're going to do something a little different. We're going to do a little clip of something. Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, I think I pronounced that right, is a Nigerian writer. Several acclaimed novels, Purple Hibiscus, Americana, The Thing Around Your Neck. She talks about the dangers of her story. And she gave a TED Talk a few years ago. Bob of AGP Video, all this setup. They did a wonderful job there. In fact, Bob, the AGP crew. Bob did a nice job of condensing a TED Talk into a nice little 9-minute clip. So let's watch.
I'm a storyteller, and I would like to tell you a few personal stories about of the single story. I grew up on a university campus in eastern Nigeria. My mother says that I started reading at the age of 2. 4, probably close to the truth. So I was an early reader, and what I read were British and American children's books. And when I began to write at about the age of 7, stories in pencil with crayon illustrations that my poor mother was obligated to read, I wrote exactly the kinds of stories I was reading. White and blue-eyed. They played in the snow. They ate apples. And they talked a lot. The sun had come out. Now, this despite the fact that I lived in Nigeria, I had never been outside Nigeria. We didn't have snow. I never talked about the weather because there was no need to. What this demonstrates, I think, is how impressionable and vulnerable we are in the face of. Because all I had read were books in which characters were foreign, I had become convinced that books, by their very nature, had to have foreigners in them and had to be about things with which I could not personally identify. Many of them available, and they weren't quite as easy to find as the foreign books, but because of writers like Chinua Achebe and Kamara Lai, I went through a mental shift in my perception of literature. I realized that people like me, girls with skin the color of chocolate, whose kinky hair could not form in literature, I started to write about things I recognized. Now, I loved those American and British books I read. They stirred my imagination. They opened up new worlds for me. Was that I did not know that people like me could exist in literature. So what the discovery of African writers did for me was this. It saved me from having a single. I come from a conventional middle-class Nigerian family. My father was a professor. My mother was an administrator. And so we had, as was the norm, living domestic help who would often come from nearby rural villages. So the year I turned 8, we got a new house. The only thing my mother told us about him was that his family was very poor. My mother sent yams and rice and our old clothes to his family. And when I didn't finish my dinner, my mother would say, like, Fide's family have nothing. So I felt enormous pity for Fide's family. Then one Saturday, we went to his village to visit. And his mother showed us made of dyed raffia that his brother had made. I was startled. It had not occurred to me that anybody in his family could actually make something. All I had heard about them was how possible for me to see them as anything else but poor. Their poverty was my single story of them. Years later, I thought about this when I left Nigeria to go to university in the United States. I was 19. My American roommate was shocked where I had learned to speak English so well and was confused when I said that Nigeria happened to have English as its official language. She asked if she could listen to what she and was consequently very disappointed when I produced my tape of Mariah Carey. She assumed that I did not know how to use a stove. What struck me was this. Before she saw me, her default position toward me as an African was a kind of patronizing, well-meaning pity. My Africa, a single story of catastrophe. In this single story, there was no possibility of Africans being similar to her in any way, no possibility of feelings more complex than pity, no So after I had spent some years in the U.S. as an African, I began to understand my roommate's response to me. If I had not grown up in Nigeria, and if all I knew about Africa were from popular images, I too would think that Africa was a place of beautiful landscapes, people fighting senseless wars, dying of poverty and AIDS, unable to speak for themselves, and waiting to be saved by a kind white foreigner. I would see Africans in the same way that had seen Fide's family. This single story of Africa ultimately comes, I think, from Western literature. But I must quickly add that I, too, am just as guilty on the question of the single story. A few years ago, I visited Mexico. Immigration. And as often happens in America, immigration became synonymous with Mexicans. There were endless stories of Mexicans as people who were fleecing the healthcare system, sneaking across the border, being arrested at the border, that sort of thing. Guadalajara, watching the people going to work, rolling up tortillas in the marketplace, smoking, laughing. I remember first feeling slight surprise, and then I was overwhelmed with shame. I realized that I had been so immersed in the media, one thing in my mind, the abject immigrant. I had bought into the single story of Mexicans, and I could not have been more ashamed of myself. So that is how to create a single story. Thing, as only one thing, over and over again, and that is what they become. It is impossible to talk about the single story without talking about power. Whenever I think about the power structures of the world, and it is Nkali, it's a noun that loosely translates to be greater than another. Like our economic and political world by the principle of Nkali, how they are told, who tells them, when they are told, how many stories are told, are really dependent on power. A person, but to make it the definitive story of that person. The Palestinian poet Mourid Barghouti writes that if you want to dispossess a people, the simplest way to Secondly, start the story with the arrows of the Native Americans and not with the arrival of the British, and you have an entirely different story. Start the story with the failure of the African state, and you have an entirely different story. I've always felt that it is impossible to engage properly with a place or a person without engaging with all of the stories of that place and that single story. Is this, it robs people of dignity. It makes our recognition of our equal humanity difficult. It emphasizes how we are different rather than how. Before my Mexican trip, I had followed the immigration debate from both sides, the US and the Mexican. What if my mother had told us that Fide's family was poor and had an African television network that broadcast diverse African stories all over the world, what the Nigerian writer Chinua Achebe calls a balance of stories? With the usual sources of irritation for most Nigerians, our failed infrastructure, our failed government, but also by the incredible resilience of people who thrive despite the government. I would like to end with this thought, that when we reject the single story, when we realize that there is never a single story about any place. Thank you.
Mi nombre es Carla Campos y vivía en Tijuana. En la edad de 7 años, mi papá me dijo que nos íbamos a vivir a San Luis Obispo. When I arrived to the United States, I was worried that I wasn't able to fit in because I didn't know English. As a second grader, only knowing Spanish, I felt intimidated to start a new school. But at the same time, I was excited for a new adventure. Teachers helped me from the beginning to adapt to this new strange language, English. It wasn't easy for me to read, write, and understand English. Over time, with the persistence of my teachers, I started to understand. What helped me was my parents. They signed me up for soccer and dance classes, and this forced me to speak English. Not until middle school, I realized that I wasn't in regular education. Because of my classes became way too easy for me, at this point, I was confident that I could succeed in a normal education. But my teachers were hesitant to move me from regular English classes because I was an English learner. My mother saw that I wasn't happy with my classes I was in and decided to do something about it. She signed me out of my English learners classes against teachers' advisements. I was thrilled to have a normal English class and have other classes that I didn't have before. I knew it wasn't going to be easy, my transition from EL classes to normal English classes. With the help of my teachers and my family, I was able to succeed in all of my classes. In my academic career, I would always need help. And over time, I would start to get help from my peers. Graduating from high school was my second obstacle. My first obstacle was getting out of the EL program. And my third obstacle was graduating from college, that I just graduated this past spring from Cal State Channel Islands with a political science major. I hope my story inspires EL students to succeed outside of the EL classes. It's not an easy path to take, but it is possible. With the help of my family, teachers, and peers, I was able to accomplish all of my obstacles. Thank you.
Hey, we're back to school, right? Avery. And thank you. First question that everyone asks me the minute they see me. So when people look at you with that kind of face, like, you know, they're thinking, old. God, I mean, you had my kids a long time ago. In fact, there are teachers in this room who I taught, okay? That's right. Power to the geezer. Well, the real truth is, I teach English here at San Luis. I love my job beyond anything I could ever say, really. In fact, I'm death. Okay, so in the springtime, I get my entire year's syllabus done for the next year. I get it arranged, you know, so that when I come back in the fall, I'm ready to go. Then I always attend graduation in my cap and gown. And then I am back and forth to school, so this is my dream death. Everything I've gone to graduation, I am walking up those steps. I walk up those steps up to the district offices, and I don't want any students around. I just want it to be private. I don't want to frighten anyone, but I simply, in my that's it. Big old, okay, and I am finished, and I'm in a gown for a person who loves teaching so much, I think it's the dream death, and I share that story with every single class I teach, just to get a So seriously, I absolutely loved that video, and I just think that if you're in school, then you are living in a very special world, education. But with this great gift comes an enormous responsibility. We must help people. I mean, I was lucky enough to be one of Carla's teachers. Imagine, well, I bet there are other teachers out there you taught her. Look at her. Look what she did. It's just so exciting. Well, when I listened over and over again to the video, I thought, you really have to consider Ms. Adichie's message. Because the danger of the single story is real. I believe that there are two ways to look at her message. One, a about others, and two, assumptions that we make about ourselves. Look at both those. Let's start with the assumptions that we make about others. Illiterate. My mother and father did not graduate from high school. I am the first woman in my family to attend and graduate from college. Just consider for a moment what assumptions I could have made about and what others might have assumed I was capable of achieving. I suppose I'm really perfect teacher material. I am. the embodiment of the power of education, the power of knowledge. Nevertheless, AP English here at San Luis Obispo High School from 1986 until 2000, making the assumption that if I taught this really good class, made it stimulating and made it exciting and made it demanding and made it so that when you are in this room, you are not afraid to go anywhere because you could take the heat. I thought that if I did it, the people would come. You know, they would just. And some people did come. In 2009, I, like many of my colleagues, had to take the CTEL exam, California Teacher. And I kind of went, oh, I don't want to take this test. But then I started studying Avery, which is very methodical and very thorough. And I'm outlining the book. Literally, I outlined it, okay, and I underlined it, and I read it many times, but I will never forget this. It said something like, there are some in education who believe that Hispanic students challenging classes. They don't want higher education because it's simply not valued in their culture. That hit me. I mean it. It hit me. I must have read that with a sick, sinking feeling in my stomach because I realized that the reason I had only had no student in my class, my AP class, was because they were afraid to take the class. They were afraid to invite them. So here's what I did. I went out in the hallway. I went where kids line up. And I just simply I said, hi, I'm Mrs. Avery. I teach AP English. Are you in 10th grade? Yeah. I want you to teach English. Well, come on, take my class. I've had kids look at me like, I don't do honors. We don't do honors now, but next year, let's try it. Let's see what we can. So I recruited in the hallway, I recruited in the library, I went to the English learner family meetings, and I made lucky enough to get our then counselor, Heidi Leal, to translate for me. Basically, I mean, I did a job, okay? Started roping people in. I really did it. I had to do teacher work because I had to rethink every single thing I did. I spent a summer redesigning my class because I wanted to make that every kid who wanted to try in that AP class had a chance for success. I got rid of all my desks and I got tables. I completely approached assignments so that every single item was scaffolded so that if the plan, you could do it. As always, I wrote every assignment that my students wrote. I could understand what the pitfalls were. I didn't make assignments that were crap assignments, sorry, but that's what I just didn't make them. I tried to make everything as meaningful as good. And guess what? Sure enough, when class started, I had flocks. And it's not just the English kids who come up to me after class in tears saying, "Miss Avery, I can't stay here. Here? I don't belong." And I said, "Why do you think that?" "Well, look around. It's all Americans." I'm not making that up. I said, "Stick with me. Everyone feels. Everyone is intimidated by change. Stick with me." And they did. They read their papers out loud to the class, and my class does. And they got applause for their papers. And then they heard papers that were much more sophisticated than. And by the end of the year, they took the AP exam. And Oscar Alonso, EL student, to score a 4 out of 5 on AP language and composition. That is success. So, those students had made assumptions. The hardest, this biggest problem we have about making assumptions, do that, it absolutely inhibits our ability to change. Well, those students transformed themselves. And just like those students, I think we are able to do that as well. By not thinking about ourselves to be in concrete. Well, until last year, I was a teacher for AP English 11. And I didn't really get to collaborate with anybody because I was kind of a lone wolf out there. But now, the AP program has grown so radically because it is now. It has grown so radically that for the first time in my career, I got to collaborate with another teacher without a doubt that it was the most glorious AP experience I've ever had. Thank you. It was so wonderful to work with someone who would share ideas with me and give me feedback. It was so wonderful to have someone real. Is what we do. Then I had another change in my life. You know, about myself, oh, I just teach English. I had another change. I got the great opportunity to become in my career at 66 years old. This year I turned 67. I got a brand new class, AVID. And I took the 10th graders and all you people, because I'm priming them for 11 AP. Very simple. By being an AVID teacher, I got this wonderful privilege of being able to work with Rita Delk. We have an AVID team. Rita Delk, James Bruce, me. Yeah. So we have our AVID meetings, and every single time we Rita or James, we all share what we're doing, and Rita and James, they would say something, and I'm not kidding. I cannot tell you how many times I sat there and thought, why didn't I think of that? I never thought of that. I'm going to do that, you guys. I'm going to do it too. There is this wonderful thing about schools. We get to be around all these cool people who can offer us ideas. Last year, Jennifer Sawyer in our library said, hey, I said, I want to get my AVID kids reading more. And she said, hey, let's do speed book dating. And I'm going, oh, I'm kind of old. I don't know about this. And she said, no, hey, let's set it up. We'll get the books out. We'll put them out by genre. Your kids will come in, look at them. We'll talk about it. You give it, you know, advice. Okay, I would have never thought of that. I would have never thought of that. I did it not only with Avid, I did it with AP, and it was a big success. Other teachers at my school did it as well. I mean, last year, Aaron Black, one of the administrators at my school, I went in, I said, hey, I need to know how to talk to somebody about the problem. Hey, just do it like this. This is what I'm trying to say. Don't make assumptions about yourself. Don't say, well, Avery does that. I've always done it this way. And it's my way. And I'm never going to change it. Okay. If you want to have a job that you don't want to leave until you drop dead, then I would recommend advocating change, because life is change. Here we are, the beginning of a new school year. I mean, God, isn't it exciting? New pencils, new pens. New email system. I mean, it's brilliant. We get to be. And anything that we did before that possibly didn't work for us or we don't like, we simply get and start over. So I want to thank you so much for being in the powerful world of education. When you look at those students, don't assume because truck driver, like my dad was, that they can't achieve. Set your standards very high. Help them get there, but make it tough and make it meaningful.
I wrote a simply top that. So I knew I was going to adjust on the fly here. Really, that was brilliant. Could I ask each of you to acknowledge and Eldra Avery, please, once again. I'm strong, you know where all this is going. I'm a strong believer that educators within organizations need to come together. There must be rituals, there must be ceremonial efforts to bring. What we do is special and unique as a career path, as an opportunity to change our own society. Today, you've seen direct evidence that you have a student in Carla Campos who I came to know in the oddest place. I took my children to this video store on Broad Street. We're movie buffs. And here I walk in, and there's this young lady with a book about this thick. And she has it on her lap, and she's reading. And she's the only person in the video store, and I walk in and in to my children. And I came to see her as the most inquisitive, special person, because she tuned 6-year-old, and they started talking about Harry Potter. And then she looked at my 13-year-old and started asking him about what he liked, and especially book and trilogies. This is someone who is so vibrant and so alive. And so when I called her, I want you to know, when I called her and asked, she really didn't want to do it. In fact, I had to pull out every trick I had to make her feel obligated. even yesterday, she was very nervous, and I thought she did a marvelous job. When Mr. Robinette and I talked about who we might come up about Ms. Adichie's single story, we thought of Eldra Avery, because in many ways, she's the embodiment of what I want. She gets it. She has captured the essence of why the danger of the single story. What I really want to say to all of you and to myself is when I watched that video for the first time, thanks to my when I watched it for the first time, I went inside of myself and started examining my own single story. And embarrassed by how many I had, how narrow they were. And I pride myself as being someone who's well-read and well-versed, but I realized how poor of a job I've done in balancing out some of my stories. From your leader. And that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to bring this forward, and I'm going to lead by example, and I'm going to try my best to balance out my own stories. And if we're brutally honest with each other, we will travel down this road together. It's awkward. In fact, I approached this topic to it. But the truth is, we all can do better. The truth is, we have to start with ourselves and ask ourselves what we really believe in as educators. And if we really believe that all the kids that walk through our door are special children, regardless of where they come from, regardless of the clothes they wear, the shoes they wear, the color of their skin, if we are brutally honest with ourselves and dig deep enough, we'll find the belief, we'll find the single stories, and we'll balance them out, and we'll find strength in that. That's really what I want to leave you with today, is whatever your single stories are, I think you'll find a great conversation with yourself. I would like to leave this wonderful kickoff ceremony with amazing man, and he's actually a genius in my mind. And he's a groundskeeper in our district who I think is brilliant. Steam power. And Kevin Patrick Sullivan is someone that if you don't know, you should come to know. He's just a neat, neat person, and leave us with a day's work. Thank you, and have a great year.
Well, in fact, I might be one of them. You look at me and you think, what's up? You know, does this guy think of anything but, what he's going to eat. I really do enjoy what I do. You know, I put myself in the moment. And that's a hard thing for all of us to do. I think it's all over the, internet or all over the world about being here. Now, I'm going to read a day's work is about that. I was This poem took place over the course of a work day. Stuck in the courtyard, and I drove out Los Osos Valley Road, working out in Los Osos the last number 6 years or so. My way back in to San Luis. A day's work. Along the way, driving out to work in Los Osos, the egret sat with fluffy white feathers, tall and bright in the morning light. Black hole collapsing the center. I'm used to the crow's lament, a hawk riding the wind, eating his prey. This white bird sitting still. What? I feel like singing. All day, my hands numb from weed whacking. Hour after hour, the weeds and grass, the sticks and stones bruise my legs, slap my face. Back into Slow Town, I spy a coyote loping just inside the road. I feel like singing. Gentlemen, have a great year.
Reggae got soul, and soul, and soul. Souls, got so much soul. Listen to the beat, moving, dancing feet. Talk about the life, yeah.
So much soul.